the radical left, the Marxists, the anarchists, the agitators, the looters, and people who, in many instances, have absolutely no clue what they are doing.
Welcome to What Radicalized You, a podcast of stories and experiences that have shaped people's ideas about our world and the way society should function.
My name is Erica Lehman. I am one of the co-hosts of Cocktails and Capitalism, a podcast that dives into all kinds of topics that have to do with capitalism and kind of tell stories that will shine light on and expose different elements of capitalism about, you know, our healthcare system, about poverty in the U.S., about the pandemic, how that's affected everything. Just did an episode about the beer hall putsch, comparing that to the Capitol riots. We have a themed cocktail every single week that kind of matches the topic of the episode. So we try to keep it fun, even though we're going into really, really heavy, dense, sometimes dark topics. These topics are all heavy on our hearts, so we try to keep it light at the same time that we're trying to understand the dark sides of capitalism and expose what's happening in our world so that other people can just have access to stories that are illuminating. I grew up in Jakarta in Indonesia. I was the daughter of geologist parents who were working on geothermal energy work over there. And I was always just a lover of nature, a lover of wild spaces and wild animals. I spent so much time out in the tropics, in the jungle, catching reptiles, catching snakes and lizards. And just that was when I was most happy in life. And I also grew up in Ridgecrest in the desert, in the Mojave. And I spent all this time just kind of getting immersed in my natural surroundings, which gave me an absolute love and appreciation for different ecosystems that are so perfect, so balanced, so beautiful. But then I also, living overseas, living in Jakarta, I would go to the fish markets and the bird markets often, which I love to do, but it was a real double-edged sword because I knew that for every single animal that I saw there, sea turtles or sloths or wild owls and, you know, the most crazy animals you've ever seen just all being sold in one place. And that it would break my heart because I knew that every single animal that showed up there, there were about 10 others that died en route or in the process of capturing them to get one to the marketplace. So that was something that really early on got under my skin, gripped me so much that that was a reality that humans were inflicting on our natural world. So I started fundraising and I started raising money for a World Wildlife Fund when I was in third grade. We raised hundreds of dollars just to, you know, try to help that organization. I thought I was going to save the world, you know. So that was kind of the beginning of this awakening that humans are mismanaging the planet and that we need to be doing better. And the other pillar of that was that I was seeing just firsthand all the time, class disparity, just right up in my face. You know, I was on, luckily, the higher end of that disparity, but in Jakarta, in Indonesia, everyone was completely impoverished. There was, you know, a few really, really, really wealthy people that were running the country, and then everyone's in poverty, except for those people. So, and you would see people begging on the streets without limbs, people just quadriplegic. Just someone drops them off on the sidewalk in the morning and they have change thrown at them all day long. And then they get picked up at some point. So people's lives like that, or women carrying their babies or other people's babies that then they would drug so that they look so ill that people would give them money when they were begging, just weaving between the cars. So that was kind of the backdrop for my life. And it really opened my eyes to both like ecological destruction and catastrophe that was on the horizon, but then also just this wealth inequality and this disparity that it just, I knew from an early, early age that it was unsustainable and that this is wrong. So that was kind of the beginning of my realization that things needed to be changed that the capitalist system that we had been born into is not the answer to all of our problems. So yeah, that was the start of my realization that adults are mismanaging the world, that we need to do better. We need to figure out better systems for managing our resources and for managing our wealth and for distributing it equitably. I've kind of gone on this back and forth motion between theory and praxis for years and years and years now, where I'm compelled to study and to learn the theory and to learn the philosophy and the bigger ideas, but then it's so abstract that I get pulled back towards the concrete and praxis and action. But I was really pulled towards just kind of understanding political theory and philosophy more, which is what I was studying at UC Santa Cruz. I did a thesis that focused on political theory and philosophy, in which I talked a lot about Marx, but also Bataille. So I started to come to the idea that Marx's critique of capitalism is so on point, is so spot on. So many of his critiques are just perfect. But some of his emphasis on work as the liberating solution to alienation and to some of the problems in society, I believe, in line with Georges Bataille, a French philosopher, that we need to be looking more at consumption and equitable consumption, not just laboring to produce, to accumulate, to hoard wealth. You know, production and labor is really an important part of the picture, but it's not the end-all be-all. What the end-all be-all should be is more fair structures for life to survive and to be sustained. So that was the foundation for a lot of my thinking about capitalism, something that then I would kind of take into different branches much later on. I got involved with a movement at UC Santa Cruz. It was the Students Against War movement during the Iraq War. There was so much protesting going on then. There was so much, we had a really wonderful group of activists who were trying different ways of protesting to, like, one thing we did was we got the military recruiters off the campus by staging a sit-in, or actually we staged a kiss-in. So it was mostly girls kissing girls and boys kissing boys in front of the recruitment table to just block people so that they couldn't go up and get recruited. So that was one of the most fun actions that we did. And I thought it was just such a cool, creative way to do something good and to get a message across the whole campus. So, and I took a class through the Education for Sustainable Living program at Santa Cruz, which is an incredible program, just such a cool, cool design for learning about all kinds of topics that have to do with sustainability. You know, sustainable farming classes or even mushroom hunting classes. One of these breakout classes was UC and the Bomb. I was shocked to learn that the UC system, the University of California, manages the two nuclear weapons design labs in the U.S. Those are at Los Alamos and Lawrence Livermore. Every single nuclear weapon that is produced in the U.S. gets that UC stamp of approval. And a lot of the time, that's a literal stamp on a bomb that says UC on it. So I was shocked and appalled that this is something that this educational system is legitimizing, is approving of, is supporting, is giving credit and making it seem like a credible enterprise when, at this time during the Iraq War, Bush is president. He's unleashing these new nuclear weapons programs called the Reliable Replacement Warhead Program. They're designing new bunker-busting bombs, earth-penetrating weapons that will go deeper, and some of them are even more contained. So, like, they're designing nukes that can be used in smaller, more localized settings. So that was in direct contradiction and completely against the... in violation of the non-proliferation treaty, the nuclear non-proliferation treaty that the U.S. had signed on to. So this is something that I was just, I wanted to have an impact in this little area because I knew that, you know, I have this institutional connection to an institution that is condoning and legitimizing nuclear weapons production. I want to press on that leverage point and try to make action there. So with this class, I learned about the effects on the environment, the effects on indigenous people through the nuclear weapons industry, like mining, milling, tailing, all those things often happen on indigenous lands. So they disproportionately affect people that have already been suffering. That was another point that kind of radicalized me about, like, so the UC is condoning all of this. Like, we need to divest from the nuclear weapons industry, just like we divested from apartheid in South Africa. So I ended up taking on that class and teaching the next version of it as a sophomore at UCSC. I was a facilitator and I was co-facilitating with my friend Mark, who was just an incredible person to work with. Really, really smart, really positive guy. We put the class together, we taught it. It was more of a facilitation than a top-down teaching approach. It was more about putting the topic in the center of the classroom and then everyone bringing what they could to the table to educate each other about it. So not like we're the just end-all be-all source of information on the topic. We would have everyone in the class do research and then present on it. And we visited the Lawrence Livermore Lab. We went to a denuclearization conference down at Santa Barbara. Like, all of our students went. Most of our students actually even participated in a sit-in at a regents meeting to try to get the UC to sever ties with the nuclear weapons labs, which was one of the most, like, I got to see that information and teaching people about a topic can not only radicalize them, but just can fill them with the drive and the desire to make the world a better place. So that was really an inspirational and motivating experience for me. But the other side of that was that we did a sit-in. I got arrested. They dropped the charges against me, but we succeeded in shutting down the nuclear portion of the UC Regents meeting where they were managing the nuclear weapons labs. So that was a small win, but temporary. And then I participated in a hunger strike to try to get the UC to sever ties. That went on for about 9 days. About 3 days in, I had a little meltdown collapse, just fall on the ground. It was just a lot, but then I got kind of in the swing of it. And it was rough because I was still teaching the class and I was still doing a lot at the time and, showing up to protests and things. And then we went to the regents meeting where at the culmination of this hunger strike, and there's a coalition of students across the UCs from all these different campuses that are there participating in the hunger strike. So we go up, we give speeches to the UC regents, we use our public comment period to put pressure on them. Then they basically, the regents just turn to us and say, laugh at us and tell us to go eat a sandwich. So that was a really crushing moment for me where I realized that all of our organization, all of our work, all of our positive energy to try to do something good and to kind of wake up the adults around us, the adults in the room about the injustices that they're signing on to, that they're just going to laugh at us. So that really, it sent me back to the drawing board about how can I make a difference in this world. I ended up going to grad school where I could study, get more deeply into the theory, feeling a little bit even disenchanted with activism and just feeling like, I don't know if, the powers that are ingrained are just so great that how do you put the pressure on to get actual change? I felt so disenchanted at that point. So I dove back in to academia. I studied a lot more political theory, a lot more philosophy. I did a dissertation on Jack London and kind of explaining the story of how he became a socialist, how he was kind of radicalized through the experience of hunger during his childhood, and how basically he saw capitalism as this kind of predatory structure that left so many people hungry. So he really, really, for me, reduced the conversation about socialism, capitalism, all these other things to a conversation about who can eat and who can't eat. This has really fed into a lot of what I've been thinking about our sustainability for our capitalist system. Like, is it just going to collapse? Are we going to find better ways? How can we either abolish capitalism or change it so that it's going to be feeding everyone? that kind of thinking is where my studies took me in graduate school. But again, I just felt that I was too removed from reality and that it was too abstract and that I didn't just want to go on to becoming a professor and teaching, that I wanted to be actually working on things that I knew were going to make a direct and concrete difference in the world. So then when I graduated, you know, I wasn't quite sure what I was going to do. I felt a little adrift, but I happened upon this organization that I have been working for, a nonprofit organization called Journeyman International. And we use volunteer architects and engineers to design sustainable humanitarian buildings like orphanages, schools, hospitals, sustainable farming centers. We are designing a sustainable farming center for ex-militant Colombia fighters down in Colombia right now. We're designing a system of ranger stations in Peru that will help to protect a part of the Amazon rainforest and its indigenous inhabitants. We're doing, you know, affordable housing designs and all kinds of really, really cool projects that help to transform lives and give people jobs and give them economic empowerment. So that has been wonderful. I love that all of the design is very focused on sustainability. Basically, yeah, all of the projects that Journeyman International designs are designed to use passive heating and cooling so that they use as little energy as possible. Many of them are solar powered or use renewable energy sources, and then they uplift people in need. So that kind of is a win-win on both the side of sustainability for the environment and sustainability for people and their economic lives. So I am a huge fan of this organization. I also think it's really important to note that this isn't just some kind of a humanitarian nonprofit that helps white saviors stage interventions in other countries. We work with young designers around the world who are completing internships and senior thesis projects, and we provide these people with opportunities to work on important social impact projects in the regions where they live. We've even built an office in Rwanda and hired local Rwandans to help coordinate so many of our projects all across Africa, Asia, and South and Central America. This model allows us to build the capacities of young locals in countries all across the globe, helping them to make a difference for people in need while also opening doors for their future employment. If anyone at any point wants to connect with me about that, either to get involved or to help support or anything, you can email me at eslehman@gmail.com. My nonprofit work is very much related to my fears and my concerns about global warming, which is one of the biggest things that I feel like has radicalized me over the years. Because global warming makes it very, very clear that sustainability is something that we need to be focusing on if we want to have a world that we can live in, you know, even a few decades down the line. We need to be thinking about how can we change our habits and our lifestyles so that we can continue to have a planet that will keep feeding people and where other people can have fairness and justice. So global warming and wealth inequality, those are the things that I keep coming back to. How can we be taking action in ways that are going to keep the planet from being destroyed and also distribute the wealth so that people aren't destroying each other? This kind of brings me to Cocktails and Capitalism. We came up with this concept for a podcast where we would tell these stories that would just illuminate different sides of capitalism and start a discussion. Doesn't even have to be an all out, like, abolish capitalism, period. Like, I want to bring in people to the conversation that have many different viewpoints on capitalism and that feel many different things and have different critiques. And so, you know, a lot of people are 100% that this is the only way for the human race. A lot of people believe that this is the one indisputable path for us going forward. But so many people, and I think women, a lot of women in the world, are starting to point out that this doesn't have to be the only way. There are other ways to live. There are other systems that would distribute wealth more equitably. So Cocktails and Capitalism, it's a great way to entertain, to have fun, to learn, to kind of be doing like I did with the UC and the Bomb class, like bringing what I can to the table to share with people then Hillary brings her great research to the table to share with people. And, you know, we bring in other people that are doing incredible work. So get them to tell their stories as well, kind of like on this podcast. So that has been just an incredible avenue for going deeper into what is capitalism? Is it sustainable? What do we want to keep about it? What do we want to throw away about it? And how likely is it that we're going to be able to change anything with it? So I think that this is going to be a great place for other people to come and join the conversation. You can laugh along with us when we're slurring our words and talking about difficult topics within the economy. So it tries to be upbeat and positive at the same time as being educational and kind of delivering the information that people don't want to learn about because it's difficult and it's boring sometimes. So, and especially I've come to the belief that storytelling is so powerful that it's an ancient art form. This is entertainment for, you know, thousands and thousands of years is how we've gotten our entertainment and joy, you know, sitting around a fire, telling stories. So I wanted to, you know, kind of find a new way to be a storyteller and to dive into topics that are just very difficult and oftentimes very challenging for people to talk about because there's so much conflict and there's so much divisiveness in this country right now and around the world. So hopefully, especially being two women that support each other and that empower each other and that are willing to hear each other out, even when we don't agree completely, I want us to be kind of a model in these times when everyone is just yelling at each other, a model for how to have a conversation about things that you don't 1,000% agree on, but we all care about and we all know that something needs to be changed, something needs to be better. The main takeaway with all of the stuff that I've done, all of these endeavors in my life, I have just come to the conclusion that capitalism is not sustainable, both for the earth, but then also for the poor. And if we want to have a future where we're going to have a planet that we can live on and enjoy our ecosystems, enjoy resources that can be distributed to the right people and equitably and not just into a few pockets, like we are going to need to address capitalism and address how it is just wrecking our natural resources, just blowing through them at lightning speed, and how it is pouring wealth into tiny pockets while starving people all around the planet. So those are the two ways that I think we need to be thinking about capitalism and how it needs to be better, how our economic systems need to improve or they're going to die. Because either we won't have the resources to continue or people will be so poor and so ground down that into the dirt that there won't be a labor force that can continue to survive and fuel the machines. If people want to tune into Cocktails and Capitalism, we're on Apple, we're on Spotify, we're on Google, we're on all of the major podcasting platforms. So you can find us pretty much anywhere that you podcast. You can also find us on Instagram at Cocktails and Capitalism. And if you ever want to tweet at me, shoot me a message at Apocalypse and Or on Twitter. That's all one word.